Well, the workplace at General Motors changed a little bit yesterday, and Barack Obama posed this question to all of us. As taxpayers, we basically own General Motors. Is it possible to own more than half of something and not be directly involved with how it's managed? The president says, sure.
In short, our goal is to get GM back on its feet, take a hands-off approach, and get out quickly.
Well, the workplace of General Motors includes large swashes of Washington as of this morning. Joining us now is David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times and author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. I guess we wouldn't call the acquisition of GM part of the inheritance. He actually went out and bought this, David. Good morning.
Well, you know, John, you could say that he certainly inherited the problem and he's trying to buy his way out of it. So you've got all these people in Washington these days who are waking up running GM and basically screaming, as the president himself did yesterday, that's okay. We really don't want to own it.
Well, let's talk for a minute. The challenge for me in the 8 minutes and 30 seconds that we have is to have a coherent conversation about two things that struck me yesterday, and you've written about them this morning in the paper. One is how in the federal environment that we've known for, you know, a century now, where the federal government is essentially a regulator, not an owner, but it does create rules for industrial companies, even though it doesn't actually own them. How is the federal government to regulate the auto industry on things like emission standards, even workplace questions, if it owns General Motors and doesn't own, say, Ford? What's the situation there? It seems to me a head-scratcher.
It sure does. And, you know, the situation that you described is only, to my mind, the beginning of the problem. Because let's say for a moment that somehow President Obama is able to pull this off, that he is able to enact the principles that this study I wrote about this morning that was done by some of his aides about the rules of the road for being a government shareholder actually get put in place. And what are the rules? The rules are no day-to-day management, be very activist at the beginning, appoint a board of directors and, you know, all that you need along those lines, but do not run the place with decisions being made at the White House about, as one of the president's aides put it to me, you know, no decisions about where to put car plants and no decisions about what color to make the cars. Okay? And the last big principle that they said was that they would, of course, get out quickly. So how do you do that when the rest of the world looks at this and says, oh, yeah, we've seen this before. It's, you know, the French owning a big part of Peugeot or, you know, any other nationalized car maker. So if our rules make it difficult for some reason for, say, the Chinese to bring cars into the United States, isn't the rest of the world going to say, oh, sure, you're just protecting your state-owned car maker?
Well, there's a World Trade Organization to deal with that. I guess I'm more concerned with Alan Mulally at Ford, who wakes up this morning and says, the World Trade Organization isn't going to protect me. I'm stuck here. GM's favored. I'm on the one who's on my own.
Well, the argument on the other side of that, and I'm not saying I agree with this, I'll just tell you how it's been answered to me when I've asked the question, is that Ford was given an opportunity to receive government help and concluded that it didn't want it, and it didn't want the restrictions that go with it, and so that they made a choice. But certainly, if, you know, 3 years from now, Ford looks in tougher shape than GM, then that could be a problem. Now, I'm not certain that that's a realistic issue, because GM's got a long way to go. I mean, here they are getting rid of four of their eight lines, right?
Right.
Pontiac's going to go away. The Hummer's going to go. I don't know where you're going to fix your Hummer, John, but
yeah.
But you're going to have to find another place, right?
I know. It's terrible. I tried to do it myself. It's rough.
You know, so you're going to have these go away. And GM has got a lot more ground to make up in the area of building small cars that are, you know, highly efficient. And this is the place where I think the conflict between ownership and government objectives could be the greatest. The president's already stepped out and said, we're going to make small, fuel-efficient, low-carbon footprint cars and make them in the United States. Well, supposing the company comes back and says, you know, Mr. President, our most profitable cars are those big gas guzzlers like Hockenberry drives, you know? And we might need a good mix of those if we're going to get back to profitability.
Well, if for instance, the models do change, and I'll ignore the gas guzzler reference for just a moment, since I do own a Toyota, and an Audi, actually, come to think of it. Can Ford make the claim that General Motors is being favored here in some sense, that the environment for product development for GM is easier than it is for Ford, and actually sue the government on that basis?
I'm not sure what the suit would be because, as I said, Ford was offered the same deal, considered the options, and decided not to do it.
All right. Well, that presumably would be the basis for regulators saying, look, you had your chance. You're out in the cold. You know, good luck to you. We've got bigger fish to fry here with General Motors. Let me talk to you about another conflict, which I'm wondering about. It may be completely the result of my paranoid fantasies. But is it possible because the government owns AIG, as well as General Motors now, that it's in a conflict of interest situation because, in theory, it holds both the fate of the debt held by GM creditors, right? I mean,
some of it.
Uh-huh. But it also holds the insurance policies that some of those debtors bought on, say, General Motors bonds, for instance, that AIG may have these weird credit default swap insurance policies of. So it's possible that the government is obligated to both give, say, 10 cents on the dollar to a bondholder for GM, but also pay out their insurance policy at 90 cents on the dollar, and we're on the hook for all that. Is that possible, and does that make any sense to you?
I guess it's possible, but it seems somewhat remote because most of the credit default swaps that we are aware of, and I could well be missing something here, were not in the territory of the GM bonds. But it's an interesting question to ask, but I've not seen any evidence yet that's a problem. The much bigger problem with AIG and with GM, I think, is the problem of exit strategy. And at what point do you get to the point where either one of these companies is stable enough that you can actually sell it back into the private market? And I think President Obama is very sincere when he says he does want to get rid of them. But think about the tension here, John. We could sell the GM shares as a government back to private investors next year, which they say they want to do. They say they want to get rid of it in 2010. But if you sell too early, you're not going to get back the full investment the taxpayers have put into it, which right now is $50 billion,
right,
with a B, and climbing, right?
Sure.
If you wait a while and the company actually does get on its feet and they actually do start building cars that people want to buy and that are profitable, and the car market comes back, and the key bet here is how quickly you get back to a good-sized car market, then you might actually get that money back.
So
that means holding on longer.
So the longer you hold on, the bigger the regulatory headaches and the legal problems that we were talking about, the quicker you sell, the less money you make, and the more you just take a financial bath with the taxpayers' money.
And a little bit of the Iraq problem, which is you pull out too quickly, you don't know what chaos will ensue.
And if GM goes down, that's a political liability for Barack Obama headed straight into the off-year election. Okay, that makes total sense to me. David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times, author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. And I did not know this, David runs a support group for men who own Hummers down in the Washington, D.C. area. David, thanks so much for being on the program.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.